When I went through a particularly brutal corporate restructure at the company I was working at in 2014, I decided that that would be my last restructure. I didn't quite know how I was going to leave, but over the next 10 years, that intent became a reality, and I'm now on a conscious break from work. I'm taking time to reflect, rejuvenate, and reinvent. I'm pursuing my own interests and experimenting with how I want to spend my time into the future. Welcome to a new series of Unchange podcast. In the next couple of episodes, I'll be talking to people who have taken breaks from work for various reasons. I want to understand why they did it, what they did in their breaks, and what they learned from the experience. My guest today is Louise Rapley. Louise Rapley is a freelance writer and editor who works with authors, publishers, website owners, and corporate clients to ensure that the written words they send out into the world are as readable and alluring as possible. Previously a textbook editor, her recent sabbatical gave her the space to dream and imagine new ways of making a living from her gifts with words. In addition, writing her memoir allowed her to truly understand and then work with the influences and life experiences that had shaped her, opening up possibilities for major personal healing and growth. Find out more about her at www.wordmagician.co.za. Welcome in the studio, Louise.
Thanks, Petra. It's great to be here and I'm looking forward to sharing my story.
Fantastic. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself before we get going?
Yeah, I spent quite a lot of time thinking about just this question. How do I characterize myself at this point in my life? And the answer I came up with is that I'm a woman living in Cape Town in the second half of my life. And my sabbatical, which officially ended a couple of years ago, is probably the point that I can mark as the threshold between the first half of my life and what I now see as the second half.
So why did you take a break or sabbatical? And how did you know it was something that you needed to do or wanted to do?
It wasn't something that I actually... that was on my radar at all. It was strange the way it happened. In 2020, my partner and I had the most amazing trip to South America planned, and we had booked everything and everything was paid for, and then COVID happened. And so, of course, we had to cancel it, and we were sitting in the difficult place that everybody is so familiar with. Is this the end of our lives? Will anything ever be normal again? What's going to happen? And so the first step was the holiday is off the table. And my partner said to me, you know, we're really disappointed. We'd been looking forward to this for a long time. It was something very special that we were promising ourselves. But I would like to see if we can turn this disappointment into something beautiful. And what he said was that he wanted to take the money that had been refunded to us from the holiday and use it to create a space for me to take a sabbatical. And that was quite a shock on so many levels because I'd never thought of taking a sabbatical before. And now he was offering to fund that for me. And I had a whole lot of resistance to that idea just simply because I was brought up with this conditioned idea that I must always look after myself because if I didn't, nobody else would. One of the worst things one could be to the family I grew up in was a kept woman. It was even worse than being mutton dressed as lamb, which is the other thing, the other mantra from my childhood. So this idea of being a kept woman was very difficult for me to take on, but I got used to it progressively. And I accepted and thought what a wonderful opportunity this was.
And where were you at that point in time in your career or in your life? So you now had an opportunity to take a sabbatical. So what were you taking a sabbatical from?
The first part of my professional life, I was a high school French teacher. So that was a 17-year period. And then this second 17-year period, I'd been a textbook editor. And I had become, you know, transitioned from being teacher to editor while I was in the middle of what turned out to be a very long and very unhappy marriage. And so textbook editing had seemed perfect for me because I could just dive into it. I could exist in my head instead of in my feelings. I could numb myself to what was going on in my life, and I could just work and work and work. And so those habits had persisted, even though I'd left the marriage and was now in a very beautiful relationship. Those habits of working, of seeing myself as only being worth something when I was productive, those still persisted. And I still had all the bad habits of taking on way too much work, of having absolutely no boundaries with my clients. The world of textbook editing, a publisher will say, right, we have this project we'd like to offer you. It's history, grade 10, we want you to do this or this. And then they tell you the proposed fee and you either accept it or turn it down. And in my case, I never turned anything down because I just thought I had to take on everything that was given to me. So I was permanently in overload, and stressed with far too much work and very bad habits of working for very, very long hours without ever looking after myself. In fact, I had the really bad habit of not being able to stop because when I stopped working, I could actually feel how exhausted I was. And I didn't want to feel that. So it was easier to sit at my laptop and to keep going until I absolutely had to stop than to look after myself and listen to my body or feel whatever I might be feeling. Much better to just be in my head and cut out all that, what I probably viewed as nonsense back then.
And so you had this opportunity to take a break from all of that. Did you have any chance to give it a bit of thoughts or to reflect on how you would like to spend the time off?
Yeah, I did. I think we cancelled. We had that holiday was planned for October 2020, and I'm guessing, trying to remember, we would have cancelled it a couple of months before, and Chris would have made that suggestion. But I only started my sabbatical in March of the following year, so I would have had 6 or 7 months. I can't remember too much of the process, but I had in the couple of years before, I had started doing small pieces of writing. So when I was strictly speaking a textbook editor and a writer, I only wrote, if I was asked to write, I only wrote according to the curriculum or according to the brief, because I really didn't think I had anything to say that anybody would be interested in. And then as things started to shift a little bit in me through this relationship with somebody saying, there is so much more, you have so much more to offer than just sitting correcting people's grammar. I started just getting curious about the world and paying attention to what was going on around me and to how I was reacting to things. And so I would read an article and see how it linked to my own life and then get an exciting idea and then write a little piece about it. And I posted some of those pieces on Facebook. I got very warm responses to them. People talked about how they appreciated my vulnerability and my honesty and my willingness to share very private experiences. And so Chris and I talked about this and about how writing my story seemed to resonate with so many people already. Perhaps my experiences of getting out of an abusive marriage and then starting to do some very deep inner work to heal very old wounds might have some relevance for other people. And so I got the idea of writing, I don't know, we got the idea that I would write my memoir during my sabbatical. And it was all a very nicely contained little thing in the beginning. I said, oh, I think, it'll take me 3 or 4 months. I can't take that long. And Chris said, no, he doesn't think that'll be enough, From his profession, he's familiar with sabbaticals, and he said to me, you need longer than that. And I said, well, okay, 6 months, because I was still terrified of being this kept woman, wanted to minimize the time that I would have somebody else paying for me to exist. And he said, no, minimum of 9 months. So that was what the original plan was. And didn't actually work out like that.
So your original plan was, I'm going to write for 9 months, and then it will be over. And then what was your plan afterwards? To return back to textbook editing? Or so that was sort of the fantasy. I'm going to take a break of 9 months, and then I'm going to write my memoir, and then it's all over, and then I'll do something else after that. But how did the fantasy pan out against the actual reality?
I really liked your synopsis there of, and that was very much my feeling. I'm going to do this, and then, oh, thank goodness, I can go back to earning a living and being independent and looking after myself like my parents taught me I should do. And no, it didn't pan out like that. So I started my sabbatical on the 1st of March. And yeah, being in relationship with an extraordinary man who was supporting me through this process, he said to me, no, don't try and do your sabbatical the way you've done your whole life so far. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, I sit down on my laptop and I start writing. He said, no, have some fun with this. What would you like to do on your first morning of sabbatical? And what I came up with was that I wanted to go to Kirstenbosch. It's one of the really special places in my life. I love sitting and looking up at the mountain and feeling the grandeur inside myself responding to those magnificent cliffs. That's something very special for me. And so that's what I did. I drove to Kirstenbosch. I went for a walk, sat and looked at the mountains. I journaled, thought about my aims for the sabbatical, and then I went and had breakfast at the tea room at Kirstenbosch, and that was my first morning. And I don't think I did any writing at all that day, and I was so grateful for that way of moving into it. Not you're replacing one rigid construct that gives you no freedom with another rigid construct, but rather, what would make your soul feel free? And that was how it started.
Yeah, I think you probably have to, you know, just first let yourself rest a little bit. You know, a little bit of a reset. Does that, like, Control-Alt-Delete. And then let the new you on sabbatical emerge. You know, so I think you have to not immediately rush into something. I definitely found that, you know, that you shouldn't just rush into something else. First, just because your body needs to, I think, relax first, and then your creativity will start flowing. I don't know if you found it that way.
But it was a much longer and slower process than I'd expected, because, you know, I'm used to performing on deadline, and so surely I should just be ready to sit down and start writing. And it wasn't like that at all. And it wasn't just that I had to let myself emerge on sabbatical, but that I had to let a manuscript emerge in its own way. And as somebody who has relied on being in control in order to make sense of the chaos in my life, that was very difficult. I wanted to force the process. I wanted to get it done. I wanted to be making progress. And it just wouldn't let me do that. Whenever I tried to be prescriptive, right, today I'm going to write about this, I would look at it, what I'd produced after a couple of hours, and think, oh, this is rubbish. This bores me. Nobody else is going to be interested in it. And so I had to really learn to let go of myself and also of the words that I was writing.
I remember that the first couple of weeks of my sabbatical, I decided I was going to rest, you know, rest and exercise and do yoga. That was it. I'm not going to put any other stress on myself at that point in time. Just get exercise, eat healthily, and get rest. And my partner said to me, for the first month, I was trying to relax. You could see I was trying to relax. But only by the second month did I actually look like I was actually relaxed. You could see it in my body, you know, that eventually this I've let go of all of the previous stuff, the previous entanglement in my previous life. I started to let go of that, and then you can start thinking about what you're going to do next. So I think it takes a bit of time because you've, like you said, you've built up all these bad habits over a number of years, and now you're trying to let go of those so that a new person can come out on the other side. And yeah, it takes a bit of time. It just takes time, and it takes as long as it takes, unfortunately. So you sat down, started writing, and how did you get back into the groove of being you on sabbatical?
Yeah, I'm just remembering one of the most difficult things for me about doing just that was that I had so much freedom, and I didn't know what to do with freedom. I didn't know what freedom was. And I found myself wishing that I could just have a boring old textbook to edit, because then I would know what to do with my day instead of having to start from scratch and find a way myself. So getting into the groove, yeah, long and slow, and it felt like I moved through cycles that kept on repeating themselves. So I would get an idea that I wanted to write about, and I would start writing on the first day of a week, and it would go fantastically. And then on the second day, I would have an even better writing day, and the chapter, whatever it was that I was working on, would be really taking form. And then I would get to a point where I felt satisfied with it. But now I wanted to move on straight away to the next thing, because that was how I was used to functioning. And having to take the time instead to say, wow, I've accomplished an incredible amount this week. I'm really pleased with what I've written. Now I have a day to just be. So maybe I go back to Kirstenbosch, or I go wandering off in the Greenbelts, which is something else I love doing. Or I sit and do my jigsaw puzzle, or I read, or I watch 3 episodes of my show on Netflix because I can't actually bear being with myself for a moment longer. I had to learn to do that. And then the cycle would keep repeating itself, not necessarily neatly in weeks. Maybe I would not get another idea for a week or so, and then I would feel a huge amount of guilt that I was wasting this time that I'd been gifted. I don't know if you had this experience, but I felt a lot of guilt about the privilege of being able to take a sabbatical.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, it was 10 years in the making for me to be able to leave my corporate job. So there was a lot of, so it was very deliberate. You know, I was going to, with the next cycle of commodity downturn, I was going to take a voluntary severance package. So I knew this was going to happen. I'd put that intent out into the universe. And then when the downturn started happening and the voluntary severance package started being offered, I went, well, this is now, you know, the universe is sending me a sign. I said I was going to do this. So I put my hand up and did it. And even though a lot of planning had gone into it, even though I had planned for it, I'd upskilled myself, I'd saved money so that I could do it, there was a lot of things that I had to do to get into that position. Even with all of that planning and hard work and all of that, once you're in the sabbatical, at some point you go, you know, this is really, really, I'm really, really, I'm privileged to be able to be here. You know, not many people can actually do this. And I completely understand, and you feel a little bit of guilt, like other people can't do this and they have families to support, or they've got obligations, or there's no ways they can save up to be able to take time off, or, you know, a lot of these things go through your mind. Even though you've done all of the hard work to put yourself in that position, you still feel a little bit guilty, especially for some of the people that I'd left behind in my corporate job. So yeah, I can totally identify with those feelings of guilt. But then I think you have to accept it, and you have to process it and think about it and maybe journal about it. I think that you have to give yourself permission to be able to be on the sabbatical and use it for what you intended to use it for. And sometimes using it for rest is okay, because that's what a sabbatical for me is about. It's about curiosity. It's about finding your creativity again. It's about finding a different human being who's inside of you, or maybe one that's been there all along. Just letting that person emerge again without having the hectic work pressures that you might have put yourself under. It's for me a time of rediscovery. And I'm completely intending to give back to the world again. It's just that I'm at the moment looking after myself. And then eventually that will emerge into somebody who's energized and able to contribute again.
I love the way you framed that. That was exactly my experience. I almost, 4 decades of trying to behave in a particular way to get approval, growing up very needy. I'd really shut myself down, and the context I was raised in shut me down too. Very conservative family that didn't talk about feelings or encourage creativity or difference. And so I was very set in that box, very earnest, and life had been hard. I mean, the first half of my life really didn't give me any inkling of what was waiting for me miraculously. Or of what I was really like. I didn't know that I was creative and playful and could smile and laugh most of the day and come up with amazing ideas. And I had no idea of that person. And I didn't know that I was so filled with courage or that I was so strong either, because I was just so used to living in this box.
It's almost as
and
if you
what I thought was good.
Yeah, it's almost as if you're living somebody else's life. You know, you're doing all the things that other people are expecting from you. You know, you're supposed to study this and then get this degree and then this degree and this degree, and then you're supposed to, in your work, progress from junior to senior to dit to executive to, and it's like this whole ladder that is sort of envisioned for you, especially if you're a very competent person. People will go, this is what we think, where we think you should. So you're almost trying to align your own life to what other people think you should do. You know, and I also got to a point where it's like, I don't actually have to live that life. I can be in the world in a different way. And that's what this Batskill is about, is to find a different way to be in the world.
Fabulous.
Mm. So tell me more about what emerged.
So my sabbatical was supposed to be 9 months long. And at the end of 9 months, I had a rough framework of my memoir. Well, I had a first draft of it, I guess I could say, but it didn't feel right. I was still in the middle of the process. And so my sabbatical was extended, and it ended up lasting until the end of October of the following year. So we're heading more for sort of 18 months. No, it's more than that. I won't worry with the maths, 18, 20 months than the original 3 that I had thought would be enough. And yeah, it was my sabbatical was really tough time mixed in with being a really joyful time of discovery and opening up. But the issues I was writing about were, first of all, trying to understand why I ended up in the marriage I ended up in, why on earth I agreed to marry somebody who, it turned out, actually didn't want to be married to me. And when I found out that he didn't want to be married to me, when he got cold feet in the 2 or 3 weeks before our wedding, I didn't put the brakes on. I waited for him to make the decision about what was going to happen. And then he said, no, it's all fine. He's clear. He wants to marry me. He loves me. I didn't say, I think there was a problem here. We should talk about this. And I'm not actually sure I want to marry you if you had doubts about me. I didn't have the self-respect to do that. I didn't have the awareness of my own enoughness to do that. I was just desperate to be loved. So I had to, the first part of my memoir was tracking how I got to that point. I was 27 when I got married. What in my childhood, what about the way I was parented, what about all the events that I lived through made me into that woman who put up with something that was, it wasn't even second rate, it was sixth rate or worse. And what about all of that first part of my life made me stay in the marriage when the conflict started? And it was conflict that seemed to be centered around sex. And I felt huge shame about it because I thought I was the only woman in the world whose husband was frustrated and angry because he wasn't happy with his sex life. And I, yeah, my shame made me close up around that topic. I would never have dreamt of sharing it with my friends, telling them what was going on. And I stuck around in that marriage for more than 17 years. So writing my memoir, I had to get really curious about what was going on, what had made me into that person, and what allowed me to stay there until I reached the point in the marriage where I thought, no, actually, the divorce that he keeps threatening me with and that I'm so afraid of, that's what needs to happen because this marriage is killing me. So you can see from what I've been talking about, these are really heavy themes. And there was plenty of abuse in this marriage too, emotional and sexual. So some very difficult stuff to look at. And my memoir took me into very dark places. It was the first time that I had really accepted a lot of what had happened and a lot of what I had tolerated. So I had to work with the feelings of loathing, self-loathing that came up. How could I have been so stupid? How could I have put up with this? What was wrong with me? I had to look at my anger for him. And then one of the most important themes for me to look at in my memoir was the whole aspect of sexuality. So in my marriage, I'd been told that I was frigid and all the fault for the conflict in the marriage was mine, and my sexuality really got shut down by that, you can imagine. I had no understanding of what desire was or pleasure was. If sex is just something that you give somebody in order to keep them happy, but that you're not taking any pleasure in, because how can you? Well, then there's some big problems there. And now when I started my memoir, I was 6 years into a new relationship in which I'd had a completely different experience of my sexuality. I had had one where my desire was paramount, and I actually didn't know how to experience desire. I didn't know that I was allowed to. I didn't know what desire felt like. So I had to learn all of that. And of course, stuff from my past would intrude on lovemaking in this new relationship. Suddenly something, a word, a gesture would trigger my old stuff, and all of a sudden my ex would be there in bed with the two of us, and I would be freaking out or reacting in all sorts of crazy ways. So my memoir, I wrote it in two parts. The first part, the short part, because I didn't want to go into a whole long, my marriage was so awful and this is what the bastard did. I really didn't want to get into that kind of thing. I just wanted to put down some of the context as a first shorter part. For me, the really important part of my memoir was the bulk of it, say 4/5 of it, which was my journey of healing in the relationship that I was now in. But of course, it's not possible to write about a beautiful experience of sexuality without also looking at the wounds. And wow, that took me into places that were very difficult to handle. Because, For the largest part of my life, I always thought that I didn't ever dream, or that I just had dreams that were a bit like, Hollywood movies, not much significance. But during my sabbatical, I started dreaming intensely and vividly, and often in very, very disturbing ways. And so all of these experiences from the past came up again. And back then when that actually happened, I was numbing, so I didn't really feel them. And now I had to feel them again, and I had to find some way of making sense of them. And so I had the amazing support of my partner, but also I had strength from myself, because as I got in touch with my sexuality, I was able to access parts of myself that I'd been cut off from. So I think that that is part of when people are raised in the way I was, of, you know, these are the things that are decent that you can do, and these are the things that a nice girl wouldn't do. Boy, how much of sex and desire and pleasure falls into the forbidden area? Certainly did for me. And I think there's actually a very sneaky agenda going on there, because my experience in the last 10 years has been that I found my power through expressing my sexuality. And so when I was brought up in a way that didn't permit that, it cut me off at the knees. I could never get in touch with how powerful I am as a human being. And so I could be kept under control.
Yeah, so it sounds to me as if, and that's sort of the next question I normally ask at this point, is that you had, just through writing your memoir and through having the space to think, there was some really, really deep introspection and reflection happening in your life. And I normally ask, what did reflection and introspection look like for you? But it seems to me as if it was the writing that unlocked a lot of it.
It really was. I'd found that from the smaller pieces of writing that I'd started doing the years before, that was how I expressed myself best in writing. That was how I processed my experiences. And then there was that third element of wanting to share my story, because so many women, when I was honest about my experiences, so many women were saying to me, or in some cases hinting, because they couldn't come out straight and say it, or otherwise saying directly, yes, that was my experience too. And it was, I was noticing it was so helpful for them to be able to talk about their own experiences in a way they hadn't been, had the chance to do before.
Mm.
So yeah, the writing was the process for me.
Yeah. So, what did you learn from the entire sabbatical, and what was the most surprising element for you?
That piece of work that I did, the extended piece of work of looking at why I made some very poor choices, that was fundamental to my growth. Because what I discovered was a part of myself that I call little Louise, at the child me. So as a kid, I had some stuff happening that was really big to handle. The biggest issue was my brother. He was 2 years older than me. I was the youngest of five. And he was a blue baby, so he had learning problems and behavioral problems. And eventually, when he was a teenager, it became schizophrenia. So I was living with some very troubling, frightening behavior. And I didn't have the support that would have helped me to deal with it properly. I really felt lost and alone, even though I was one of a big family. My parents didn't have the time to give energy to me. I was the quiet little girl who behaved. All the energy went to my brother. And little Louise sort of found her ways of coping. Number one, numbing, go into head, think, don't feel, catastrophize, over-dramatize to try and get attention. Because if I kept quiet, nobody paid me any attention. If there was an issue and I overreacted to it, maybe I would get a bit of attention. Usually not terribly positive, but any attention is better than nothing. And what I had to realize through writing my memoir was that little Louise was actually the dominant aspect in my personality still, Of course, I was able to be adult Louise for long stretches of time, but when there was any kind of crisis, I defaulted to little Louise behavior. And it wasn't helpful. It didn't work when I was a little girl, and it certainly didn't work in my 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s. And really starting to pull that behavior apart, to understand what it created it, to understand what the payoffs were for it, to see it in action, to actually recognize it. I mean, I can now, I was in a conversation last week, and I could suddenly feel little Louise come over me. Adult Louise had disappeared. I could feel the panic and the, I just wanted to burst into tears. That was very much little Louise behavior. I could feel that happening, and I could say, just hang on a second, I need a minute to gather myself. And then I could move back into the adult person. But I only learned to do that through my writing, through my memoir. It took a hang of a lot of practice, and it's taken huge self-awareness and developing an outer witness. But it is the most incredible gift to have today.
It just sounds to me as if you went through a huge transformational process during your sabbatical, as if it was like a, like you said at the beginning, one of the sort of milestone moments of your life, where you went from one person to another person. It just, you know, do you think you would have done this sort of learning and growth if you hadn't taken a break?
Absolutely no way. I had been doing some serious inner work for a few years, but this kind of transformation takes headspace. It takes reflective space. It takes being able to have a night where you barely sleep and you're sitting journaling. Sorry, I'm going to change from you to I, where I barely slept and I was sitting journaling at 3 o'clock in the morning because I'd had such a horrible dream. You can't do that on a regular basis and then sit down to work the next morning. But having the urgency of work removed meant I wasn't panicking at 2 o'clock in the morning and saying, oh, I have to go to sleep. How am I going to cope with tomorrow? I could say, I'll take a nap tomorrow afternoon. This is important processing that I'm doing. I'm going to honor it and do it. So no, there's no way I could have. I think if I hadn't had my sabbatical, then perhaps this transformation would still have happened, because it was happening already, but it was gradual. I needed a gap. I needed a space to let it all be, and to go into whatever place it took me, and to explore that place, and to come out at the end with a deep understanding of myself and a compassion for myself and for my family, for my parents, and for the possibility of huge amount of healing of my relationships, not only my relationship with myself, but my family relationships. It could never have happened without a sabbatical.
Yeah, so what an amazing gift that was, the time off. So you went through this 12, 15, 18 months of transformation and
18,
writing.
20, 22. Yeah.
Yeah, my partner keeps saying, I'm quite naive to think I'm only going to be off for 1 year. We'll see what will happen next year. And, but you went through all of this. You took the time off. You did some writing, did this deep inner work. And what happened after that? So how did you slowly like reintegrate yourself back into like, I don't know what, I don't want to say normal society because it's not normal. It's just different. And so what happened next after that? Did you go back to writing textbooks or editing textbooks, or did you design a new life for yourself?
Well, what happened, the way my sabbatical came to an end, was that this memoir really had taken on a life of its own, and it insisted on being in a particular format. And I got the idea that the story, particularly the way I've healed the issues with my sexuality, would be very helpful to other women specifically. And so I wanted to publish this book. And so I sent it off to a publisher and I requested a book report. So this was a publisher, you know, one had to pay to submit a manuscript, and then for an extra fee, they would give a book report. And of course, you talked about the fantasy earlier. So here was my fantasy that the publisher would say, "Oh, this is amazing. I want to publish it." And next second, I'd be in demand as a podcast guest and feted all over the world by women who found answers in my wisdom. And of course, it didn't turn out anything like that. The reader's report was quite devastating to read. The publisher's feeling was, well, she summed it up, "This is not my cup of tea." And she found the stuff, the part where I'd focused on the beautiful growth, she wasn't able to see that because she was getting so hung up on the... My introduction was a chapter contrasting two sexual acts of the same kind, but one from back then in my past and one from now. And I think that was just too shocking and too graphic for her, which I really get now. When I wrote it, I think I was quite naive in thinking that it would find an audience and that she would be a receptive audience, because I'd got so comfortable with my sexuality that I was sort of assuming everyone was. And that was a very big mistake. So I was really grateful in the end for her somewhat less than excited response to my manuscript. She certainly didn't offer to publish it. And I had to go away and say, well, now what? My dream, I'm at the end of my sabbatical, my dream's gone. I could, of course, have submitted to other publishers, and it's very possible I would have found someone to publish it, but it just felt that that would be the wrong thing to do. And I had to go off and think, well, now what? And it really is important to me still to put some of that writing into the world. I'm so over the story of the bad marriage. That's really not interesting to me at all. But the story of the healing and the processes that helped me heal, I think that's valuable information. And so my longer term plan is to have a website that offers that writing, or not specifically that writing, writing on those themes. Some of those pieces I would use, and then some others that I've been working on and that I will still write. So that's a long term dream, just for my wish to offer something to women, because my understanding of what sexuality is so different from the norm, from what I was brought up with, and so exciting and beautiful and powerful. And I think that's something the world needs to know, and women need to know about. On a sort of, well, what did I do next level? In January of the following year, I sat down to go back into work, but I was a different person. There was no way I could go back to editing textbooks. I'd come alive, and I couldn't shove myself back into a box, and I couldn't, and now I was strong, and I knew how powerful I am. There was no way I could let other people walk over my boundaries anymore. And actually, I'd become, I think, too sure of those boundaries to even enter into a kind of contract with somebody else to work for them and on terms that I thought was exploitative. So I'd pretty much disqualified myself from being a textbook editor. I sat down, started exploring what I might want to do, and I looked at options. I was considered doing a coaching course. That might still be something I want to do later on. And then I thought, hang on, I'm actually a really good writer and editor. I have experience, qualifications. They might be in the textbook industry, but I'm pretty sure some of those can be translated into other areas. And so I started exploring, as I said in the, as you said in the blurb, other ways of making a living with my gifts for words. And that's what I've been doing for the last 18, 19 months. And it has been the most tremendously exciting journey. I haven't had an urgency to earn. I've been in this remarkably privileged place of still not having to buckle down and take on whatever is offered to me simply to keep myself. I'm moving towards that now where I might have to take on a piece of work that doesn't really interest me just so that I'm earning. I'm not talking in specifics yet. I'm just saying that I'm going to be less picky about what I take on if necessary. But I've had the most fabulous time of becoming something different that I never dreamt was possible. It's been amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing when you start doing work that makes your heart sing. Yeah, you sort of do things that align with who you are. And yeah, it makes a huge difference in your life. So what I'm hearing is that a lot of the behaviors and routines that put you into a like almost burnt out state before going into the sabbatical, you've addressed, and you're not going to go back to that sort of behavior, which is good. But how are you maintaining that sabbatical mindset? Because you get into like a groove in your sabbatical where you look quite happy with how the days are progressing and how the weeks are progressing. And for me, it's almost like finding a perfect balance in each day, perfect balance in each week, about, the perfect balance of a bit of work, a bit of exercise, a bit of reflection. So how are you maintaining the lessons you learned from your sabbatical still now?
It's a big challenge. For me, I know my most destructive behavior is numbing, and so I have to watch out for that in myself. I get very disciplined about stopping to eat, to look after myself, to relax. I can work in a very focused, intense way, and I have to keep that outer witness going to notice, sure, that's really important. That's great work you've done. You need to stop now and take a break. And the temptation is so strong to just stay. I'll just stay here and do another paragraph and then I'll stop. And I know that thing in myself. Whenever I hear the word just, it usually means I'm about to make a big mistake. Like I'll just do one more. And so I stop. And when I stop, I feel how tired I am. And very often I need to go and do something like my jigsaw puzzle that is not involving my mind. And then I can feel exactly how tired I am. And then I realize I actually needed a much longer break than I'd thought. I try to give myself that. I try to be kind to myself, but it is a big challenge because these are very ingrained patterns of behavior. Sabbatical mindset. Oh, my sabbatical, in some senses, you could say I'm still on it because I'm working, I'm editing at the moment, I'm editing a manuscript, but it's not a textbook. So I'm still playing around in some senses.
You're basically still in that transition stage. It's not actually over yet. I think you still might be designing what your future life is going to look like. Still getting it done. Yeah.
Very much so. I found, for example, last year I was offered a project. It was a proofread of a French textbook. And I thought, so now I can use my skills. And I absolutely adore French and really miss, I used to love teaching French. I really miss using it in my life. So I thought, oh, fantastic. It's a textbook, but I can draw on a skill that I enjoy. Well, it actually didn't work out, and after a couple of days, I had to say, I'm sorry, I'm not able to do this. I'm not able to perform your brief. This is my very bad habit of perfectionism kicking in. Whenever I was working on a manuscript, I would take it as my responsibility to transform it into something magnificent, no matter how badly written it was in the beginning, or how not suited to purpose it was. And with this particular book, this French proofread, they just wanted me to do a final check for errors before the book went off to be printed. And I couldn't. My teacher self was there as well as my French self. And it was going, hang on, this exercise is at a far too high a level. The book's been at a kind of baby level. And then suddenly there's one chapter that is at high school level. This can't work. They weren't interested in hearing that. They just wanted me to find the mistake, the spelling mistakes. I couldn't do it. And I had to accept that. A very big lesson for me, my perfectionism. I have to learn to harness it when it's required. And in this case, it wasn't required. And so I chatted to the managing editor and said, look, I can't do what you want me to. Would it be okay with you if I withdraw from this? And she said, no problem. We'll find someone else.
Mm. Yeah. And that might be part, as a result of the growth that you've done. You knew what you could do and couldn't do, or what you wanted to do and didn't want
Absolutely. To do. I'd ruined so many projects for myself edited while I was doing textbooks because I would get this megalomaniacal thing of, right, now I must make this into the best ever book. And my perfectionism would come out and I would find myself putting in far more time than I was supposed to be, which meant that my fee per hour was dropping to really pathetic rate. And then I would get angry and resentful that I wasn't being paid properly. It actually was my fault. So I've got the book I'm working on now. I had a call with the author and I said to him, it seems to me, my instincts are telling me, I'd only read two chapters, not the whole book, that your book would benefit from some developmental work. I don't think your argument is coming through as logically as it could. So that is the possibility, and this is what it would cost. Or I could just do what you want, which is a straightforward copy edit. He went for the copy edit, and that is what I'm doing. I'm stopping myself from going into all the places where I want to say, oh no, actually you already said this and this is irrelevant. That's not what he has commissioned me to do. It's not what I'm being paid to do. And so I'm limiting myself to fitting in with a brief, having presented him with both options. It's his choice, and I'll deliver what he's chosen and what he's paying for.
That's fantastic.
Such a better way of doing things.
I think so, yes. I would ask you here, do you think you're going to take another sabbatical in your life? But it seems like you're still on sabbatical.
Yeah, it does. I really hope that I'll have the chance to take another one if the need arises. I hope that I'll be in this privileged position where I can do it. But also, my life is so different. I'm not working at full steam yet. Actually, I'm pretty close to it. But everything has changed. Who I am has changed. How I set boundaries has changed. So it kind of feels, even though I'm now working again, kind of feels like I'm on holiday in so many senses.
And I think that's probably the best possible result, is to come out a different person who feels much more fulfilled with the work that you're doing at the end of it. Yeah. Is there anything that you would like to mention that we didn't talk about?
I feel like I've bared my soul already. I've gone into some topics that you have probably not had guests mention before. Just to say that the trajectory of the first half of my life did not promise me this magnificence, this wondrous experience, and I am so grateful for that.
It's been absolutely fantastic hearing your story. Thanks so much for sharing it and being here in the studio with me. Thank you so much.
It's been such a pleasure.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.